We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Joining us right now, the great radio voice of the red hot, scalding hot, pinch me now, New York Mets. And that's Howie Rose. Howie, how are you?
I'm well, Joe, but I'm worried. You sound happy. That usually doesn't lead to something good.
Well, you know what? How could I not be? I mean, let me start with this, Howie. Did you see this? I mean, and I understand that they haven't, you know, they've beaten the teams they've beaten. Yeah, I understand. The Padres, the Pirates, you know, the White Sox, the Marlins. Did you see this coming?
I didn't see 13 out of 14. I didn't see 19 out of 25. But we all looked at the schedule. And as the All-Star break approached, I think it was very sensible to take a look at what was coming up in the near term in terms of the degree of difficulty their opponents presented, and said if they were ever going to make a run, this is the time to do it. You've got to do it with these teams they were going to be facing in and around the All-Star break, and they've done that. So what they've done, what they've accomplished, is to put essentially, 3.5 or so months of a mediocre at best baseball behind them.
Yep.
And say, guess what? They're there. It's on. I mean, the season starts all over tonight, as far as I'm concerned.
No question.
Tonight is reopening day, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree with you more. And I want to get your opinion on this, Howie, because rarely do I get excited about, hitting coaches, pitching coaches. I mean, there's been some, Dave Duncan comes to mind. Stottlemyre was great. Leo Mazzoni. There's been a couple of really good ones. But to me, the turnaround in this team and the difference in the bullpen, Diaz aside, and the starting rotation now pitching to the capabilities that we expect them to pitch to, I got to give Phil Regan some credit here, don't I?
It's unmistakable, and I'm not saying that, what Phil Regan has done has been to clean up a mess that Dave Island left, because Dave Island didn't leave any mess. I thought Dave did a terrific job last year.
Right.
But, again, I think you temper some of it based on the opponents they've played, but one of the ways that the Mets have achieved the success that they have over this period of time, during which they've won 19 of 25, is that their starting pitchers are giving them just about 7 innings every night. And that's huge, because what it's done is minimize the impact that the bullpen could have in a negative way. You're not really seeing those guys pitching the sometimes even 5th, 6th, and 7th innings who were struggling there before. You're basically getting the ball into the hands of your best relievers late in games. Now, certainly there's still a lot to be desired from what Edwin Diaz has done, and Gesellman is starting to show signs of getting better. And if you can get those guys turned around along with the brilliant work that Lugo has done, then you don't have to be afraid of going out there the way they were earlier. But that all stems from the length that they've gotten from their starting pitchers, and you've got to give Phil Regan some of the credit for that, I would think.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think he's done a terrific job. Again, we're talking to the great Howie Rose. As Howie said, the Mets season starts tonight, a monstrous 3-game series with the Nationals at Citi Field, as Marcus Stroman will start to find out about him as a Met tonight as well. All right, Diaz has been horrible. We saw it the other day. Mickey kind of hedged on the fact that who the closer is going to be, but the doubleheader they had with Miami, to me, was telling, Howie, and I want to see what your thoughts are on this. 4-run lead in the first game, he puts Diaz in, and he was a little shaky, but he gets out of it. 1-run lead in the second game, he goes to Lugo, and not only does he go to Lugo, he goes to him for 2 innings for the save. Who now, in your mind, is the closer?
I don't know that you can necessarily designate either of them as the absolute closer, because there are a lot of variables, particularly as it pertains to Lugo. They've got to take his temperature every day terms of his availability for that day or sometimes even the next. Remember, the guy's been pitching for a few years now with a torn UCL, and they say that that elbow is fine, that that's not the issue. It's just his resiliency and how quickly he can bounce back. And what they've learned recently, and this is just because of what Seth has told them, is that he's in better shape to pitch back-to-back days than they thought even a month or two ago. So I think you're going to see a lot of situations where, if it's a flip of a coin, it might come down to Lugo getting the save opportunity simply because he's been the better pitcher. But they need Edwin Diaz, and I don't think it's trite to suggest that if they don't get him turned around, they're not going to make it. They can't lean on one guy out of that bullpen. And I keep going back. I know I crunched some numbers when we were in Chicago and the Mets were playing the White Sox, and, you know, Diaz was continuing to struggle. And I know Mike Vaccaro had something in the post today that kind of alludes to this as well.
Tug McGraw.
Yeah, you know, you look at where Diaz has been this year, and you look at where Tug was in 1973, and even later than where we are now, on August 22nd of 73, Tug McGraw's earned run average was 5.31, and he was the mess that Edwin Diaz has been for a good chunk of this season. Now, McGraw had a bigger body of work by that time in his career as a successful late-innings reliever. They didn't even necessarily call him closers then because they were utilized differently. But just so you know, in the last 19 games that McGraw pitched in 73, that covered 41 innings. He gave up 4 earned runs. Mm. Went 5-0 with 12 saves, so he had a 0.88 ERA down the stretch after being 5.31 for better than 4 months. It's a valid comparison with Diaz, only to suggest that that's kind of like what Diaz needs to do if he's going to reestablish himself as the lockdown guy the Mets hope that he was. So historically, you look at what Tug did and say it can be done. But they can't get by with just Seth Lugo as a reliable guy in that bullpen. They have to get Diaz back somehow. They have to get a better Jairus Familia than what he's been. And, I think that when you look at what they've gotten from their starters, that's great, but they're not getting 7 innings from their starters every night down the stretch against a much better quality of opponent than they've had recently.
Yeah, you know, one big difference, though, between Diaz and Tug is that Tug was a Met. I mean, he'd been a Met for a number of years already. You know, you had confidence in Tug McGraw. This guy,
because of the body of work, which
right,
is what I had just
Met.
Suggested.
This guy came from Seattle. I got no confidence in this guy. He's got like the deer in the headlights look when he's out there anyway. And the minute he throws a ball, you hear the crowd. The minute he throws his first pitch, it's a ball, the crowd's buzzing already. This guy's going to blow it. And that's the difference to me, Howie.
Well, the difference can't matter whether he comes from Seattle or Venus. I don't care where he comes from. It's just that he doesn't have the body of work as a successful closer that Tug McGraw had by the time 1973 rolled around. So, you know, the scary thing is maybe I had a little bit of a greater sense of confidence that Tug could come back from where he'd been only because he had done that before. With Diaz, one dominant year as a closer. But, again, they need him. I don't think they can finish this off unless they get a much better Edwin Diaz and a much better Jairus Familia and even a much more consistent Robert Gsellman than they've been. They cannot lean on one guy out of that pen and expect to get this done.
And they just brought a guy. Who's this guy? Brock they brought in?
Yeah, I mean, he's been a reliable reliever before. He's made an all-star team. He's been with a few different teams. But the thing of it is, his problems this year have come in large part because he's faced too many lefties. If they can keep him to where he just faces right, you look at the splits on him, his numbers against right-handed batters have been fine. It's left-handers who have really eaten him up. So, you know, if they can utilize him against some favorable right-handed matchups, he should help.
Now, I understand that, you know, Robbie Cano. I have no love for what I've seen from Robbie Cano, okay? You know, you know what I'm saying? I know he started to hit lately, but the injury to me is a big deal, not because, you know, they can't live without Robbie Cano in his lineup, but because they got no depth, Howie. I mean, that's why, to me, they got to go out and get Joe Panik. I mean, look at the guys they got on the bench. I mean, there's nothing on this bench right now, and Nimmo, God knows if he's ever coming back. Jed Lowry, forget it. He's in the witness protection program. I mean, they got no bench, Howie.
I don't disagree with that in terms of, you know, the quality of depth on the bench. I think there's a pretty good chance that they make a deal with Panik in the next day
or so.
He clears in about 2 hours, and at that time he becomes a free agent, and I don't know any more than what you've been reading. It's the same stuff.
Right,
but
right.
All the indications seem to be that there's mutual interest there, so it wouldn't surprise me at all. Now, the thing of it is, you know, you sit down with your scouts and you go, why has Joe Panik fallen off the earth the way that he has in the last couple of years? And, your scouts, having done their jobs, will let the front office know exactly what they see and if there's something salvageable there. You don't just take a chance based on a guy's reputation. But I'll say this about the first point that you made about Robinson Cano. Defensively, this team's better without Robinson Cano. I've seen that already this week.
Yeah,
you know, they
had
one game. Rosario's getting better. I don't think there's any way around the fact
that
Rosario's better. I'm talking about defensively.
Yeah, no, I know. Definitely.
He's better at shortstop now than he was a month ago, and he's much better than he was 6 weeks ago. And I give, you know, you're talking about Phil Regan. I give a ton of credit for Gary DeSarcina for the amount of time and work that he's put in with Ahmed Rosario to make him a better shortstop than he's been. I don't know what his ceiling is defensively. That's another story. But I know he's better now than he has been. But just the other night, forget about Rosario for a moment. They had a game with Echeverria at shortstop
and
Luis Guillorme at second base. And I said, whoa, we haven't seen this kind of infield defense all year. And Todd Frazier had a whale of a game that night defensively, too. But, you know, never, ever, ever, ever discount the significance of the middle infielders making the plays that they have. And I'll go back historically again to 1973. You're going to remember two key guys up the middle were hurt that year. Jerry Grody behind the plate, Buddy Harrelson at shortstop.
Yep.
When those two came back, all of a sudden, everything changed. And, you know, you have to support a strong pitching staff with strong defense. You looked up the middle before, and you didn't see that. They're getting there. And let's face it, Robinson Cano, we're not taking a cheap shot at him. He's 36. His range has been compromised. It's not there. And to see the way they've caught the ball at second base and made plays and turned double plays over the last week has been eye-opening to me. I don't think you can ignore that. So defensively, from all indications, Joe Panik can still get that done. And if the bat's falling off, that's where they've got to dig in and digest and dissect the reasons why. But, man, I'm telling you, since Cano's left, the infield defense has turned around. And I'm sorry, but that's the eye test. I don't need numbers to tell me that.
The one thing, though, Guillorme's got to make sure he steps on the base when he's getting ready to turn a double play. You know what I mean?
Yeah, okay. Al? But that's the outgrowth of the rule that when they,
and I know the neighbor,
you know, that's I'm talking about getting to the ball.
No,
catching
I know
the
you're
ball.
Right. You're not wrong. You're not wrong. But I have to point, you know, me. I got to point that out. I mean,
I understand. that's just one isolated thing. I don't worry about that.
Right, right. How good is Jeff McNeil, by the way? Oh my God. I mean, this guy is. He gets two hits every game. Now he's hitting home runs. The guy plays right field. He plays left field. He plays third base. He plays second base. He could probably catch if he has him to do that. I mean, this guy's he's Tony Gwynn. I mean,
yeah, there's a great article in the Post today by Mark Canizaro, too. Just imagine if golf coaches had believed in Jeff McNeil when he was looking for a golf scholarship, the Mets would never have had him. So he may be a scratch golfer, but thank your lucky stars that he wasn't a better golfer in high school, or else we might not be having this conversation.
You're right. He's what a hitter this guy is. It's unbelievable.
He's a delight to watch play the game.
Oh, he is. He's just such a throwback guy. And really, this is the first time I can remember in a lot of years, Hal, that they got a real solid young core, basically outside of J.D. Davis, who I include in that, by the way, of young homegrown guys.
Right. I love that.
I mean, it's tremendous. It really is.
I love that. And I point that out all the time on the air. There's nothing that energizes a fan base more than to see some of their own come through the system. You just latch onto them in a way that you don't the guys who sign from elsewhere or are traded from elsewhere, with some exceptions, of course, starting with people like Mike Piazza. But, you know, you look at top of that order now, and you see McNeil, and you see Conforto, and you see Alonso, and you see Rosario, and you see DeGrom, and, you know, you see some of the others, and you go, man, this isn't just fun now. This is hopefully going to be fun for a little while with guys that have come through the Mets system and, you know, thereby guys that you just feel a little deeper attachment to.
Yeah, and J.D. Davis, even though they got him in a trade, I mean, he's been terrific. And you know, he's playing every day, and he should be playing every day.
Well, he's the best of the acquisitions that they made last offseason. I don't think there's any question about that. He's certainly one of the less headlined of the acquisitions they made, but no question he's been the best.
Yeah, he's been great. There's no doubt about it. Again, we're talking to the great Howie Rose. But see, what we're talking about with the homegrown guys, this goes back to what I'm saying about Diaz. See, this guy came from the Mariners. I got no confidence in this guy. He hasn't done nothing as a Met. And it's the same thing for me with Stroman. Now, I'm not going to put any stock in the first game Stroman pitched because he got squeezed by the umpire. He made that great play on defensively to, you know, to really save that inning and maybe that game. But, you know, Marcus Stroman now, I got to find – I don't care what he did in Toronto. I got to find out. Now I want to see him, what he does for my team now, Howie.
How long did it take you to latch on to Piazza?
But Piazza's great. With Piazza.
I'm just saying. I don't care where these guys come from. I don't care if they come from Mars.
But you understand what I mean? You got to prove it to me on my team. You know what
okay.
I'm saying?
Okay.
And I think,
well, that's fair. I mean, it does. That's all fair. But I'll tell you one thing: if the infield defense ever does become more of an issue, heck, you can stick Stroman at shortstop or second base.
He is, yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, as athletic as he is.
Yep. Yeah. No doubt about it. And I tell you, it's just been amazing though what they've done, and they really got a shot. I mean, with their rotation now, you know, certainly the top three is, you know, to me, and I understand what Houston has, and I'll leave them out of it right now. But their top three guys are certainly as good as anybody in the National League.
There's no question they've got the deepest starting five of the National League, right? And here's one other thing to remember, too. You know, we've been talking about the degree of difficulty in the opponents that they've beaten up recently and how now they're going to be stepping up in class. But keep in mind one other thing. And this was not true last year. In fact, it was practically the opposite. But the Mets are now 32-20 at Citi Field, and they've got the bulk of their games remaining at home. And last year, for example, I think they were 19-32 at Citi Field in the same number of games that they were 31-20 this year. So that's been a huge turnaround. And I don't think you discount that either, the fact that the bulk of their traveling's already been done. And so you're going to have some other teams that might be sucking a little bit of wind going down the stretch. The Mets should be energized by the fact they'll be sleeping in their own beds a lot more. And trust me, as a guy who makes most of the road trips, that counts for something.
Sure, sure. And I think they get the best home record in the division, if I'm not mistaken, Hal.
Yeah, so there you go. So you can lean on that, too.
Yeah, no, there's no question about it. No, it's been an unbelievable run. There's no doubt about that. And look, nobody saw this coming. One other thing I want to throw at you, too, and I want to give Mickey Callaway, and I've had my issues with Mickey Callaway, but I want to give him credit for this. And maybe it was his call, maybe it was Van Wagenen, and you never know in this day and age. But moving Conforto in front of Alonso, Conforto's been on fire ever since they did that.
Oh, whenever Mickey's been asked about should you move Conforto here, there, or the other place, he says, no, we like exactly what he's done in the two-hole. And there are some days that they are going to change. Like they did the other day. They had McNeil leading off and Rosario hitting second.
But they still had Conforto in front of Alonso, though.
I'm sorry?
No, but Conforto was still
batting. Yes, he was
in front of Alonso
because he was third and Alonso was cleanup. Right,
right.
Right. So that's been a huge thing for both of them, but especially for Conforto, too. And, you know, Michael, since the All-Star break, has been the Michael Conforto we've all expected to see. And as Michael will be the first to tell you, the one thing that he's most perplexed by is how many peaks and valleys he's had over the course of his big league career so far. But he's still been a darn good hitter, and even during those valleys, manages to get on base often enough so that he can help being productive. Even when he's not hitting, he's getting his walks. And that's been rather important when you consider that there have been guys in the middle of the order who've been doing their jobs, whether it's Alonso or even Ramos, and you know, bringing base runners home. So, I know we said it as far back as spring training. I thought this would be the year that Michael Conforto would be completely consistent from start to finish and have that 300-type season with the 30-plus home runs and the 100 RBIs. And you know what? Maybe the 300 average is not going to be there, but that 3,100 probably will be, or at least the 30, and hopefully he gets close to 100 RBIs.
Yeah, no doubt about it. One last thing, Dom Smith, are we going to see him back anytime soon, Howie?
Not anytime soon, no. It's going to be a while. I don't think that he's going to be doing anything baseball-related until, at best, late this month. And, you know, the other thing is that as you get into September, the minor league seasons end around Labor Day, and so the opportunities to rehab down there become a little more difficult to create. So, no, I think we might see Nimmo back before Smith at this point, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. By the way, John Heyman is tweeting the Mets are expected to sign Joe Panik.
Yeah, not a surprise at all. Not a surprise whatsoever. And, you know, he's a local kid, and you hope that just being home changes scenery.
And he's a winner.
Can make some difference, right? And he's got, he's got World Series pedigree. And so you hope that also provides some extra depth and help down the stretch. And he's a left-handed bat, too, which they really need on the bench, whether he's starting or not.
No doubt. Howie, great stuff. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to a great finish to the season, hopefully.
I can't wait. And can I say one other thing real quickly, too? Because
sure.
I don't really get the forum to do this anymore, but I'm just so thrilled for the New York Islanders and their fans that they're finally getting the building that has so long been elusive, you know? I just think the fact that that Belmont project's going to happen is fantastic.
Yep.
They deserve it. It's going to be a great thing for Long Island, and I'm just tickled that it's actually going to reach fruition.
And let me say this, while you're talking about the Islanders, maybe if they would have played round two in the playoffs at the Nassau Coliseum instead of back at the Barclays Center, maybe they would have won that round instead of getting swept.
No kidding, huh? The sooner they can have nothing whatsoever to do with Barclays, the better.
Yep, couldn't agree more. Howie, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you, hopefully, as we move toward the playoffs, all right?
Okay, you hang in there, Joe.
Oh, I'm hanging.
We've got 7 weeks left.
No, I know. Believe me, I know. All right, Hal. Take care.
Be good, buddy.
The great Howie Rose.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.